Interrobang.
From catschool.net, I'm Dave DeGraw, and you're listening to Interrobang. On today's episode, I am joined by Tom, who runs the website MacSourceports.com, providing source ports of various games built for Apple Silicon and Mac systems. If you like playing games on your Mac, check out MacSourceports.com. And also, I will leave a link to his Ko-Fi donation page in the show notes. Let's get right into it. Welcome back to Interrobang. On today's episode, I'm joined by my buddy Tom. Tom runs an awesome website called MacSourceports.com. If you're an Apple user and you want to play games, especially if you grew up kind of in the 90s playing, you know, 2000, some retro PC games, I'll let Tom kind of explain what it is, but I just want to say welcome to the podcast and thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. So, ahead. My website is MacSourceports.com. And we either build or point to builds of source ports for modern versions of Mac OS, namely Intel 64-bit and Apple Silicon. A source port being, if there's an old game and they've put out the source code, people still maintain it or whatever. And I just started this site where I'm going through and either building or in some cases just linking to builds of existing games.
And you explain the need for this because a lot of times, well, on your FAQ on MacSourceSports.com, you kind of explain some of the rationale and reasoning behind this. But a lot of times it's like there's just open source. Maybe I'll use Diablo as an example, right? We have Devolution X, which is like an incredible source port. They've ported that thing to every system. And I know that they're probably better at providing Mac native builds and everything, but it's just really, really cool that you're able to go get, and sometimes it's community efforts that have kind of made engine compatible ways to play the game. And sometimes it's the original developers releasing the source code under GPL or other licenses. But really, we need somebody to go in and actually build it and sign and notarize it so we can run it on our Macs cleanly. And for me, as a gamer, right, I'm a programmer too. And theoretically, you know, I could figure out how to build all this stuff from source and install the dependencies. But in practicality, it's a nightmare. So I came across Mac Source Ports just because, you know, I like to play games on my Mac. I'm a big Mac fan. I like my Apple Silicon, and I want to get the most performance out of it that I can. And Mac Source Ports lets me do that. So thanks a ton personally for Mac Source Ports, man.
Welcome. Yeah, what I ran into, I mean, basically, I was getting involved in working with old source code. Like, just the short version is that, like, I was always interested in game development, but just for various reasons, my career just didn't go that way. Yep. And then a few years back when I saw that the id Software ports of Wolfenstein 3D and Doom were about to stop working because on the iPhone were going to stop working because they were cutting off 32-bit support. I thought, oh, I'm an iPhone developer, because I was at that point. An iPhone developer is like, I'll just break them out, you know, because they were based off of existing source ports. So when Carmack ported them to the iPhone, he put his version online, the source code. So once they stopped working, I thought, oh, well, the source code's out there. I'll just pop it open in Xcode, hit rebuild, and that'll fix that. That was my first thought. The second thought I had was, if it was that easy, someone would have done it by now. And it was not quite that easy, but I got it working. And at that point, I was like, well, let's see if I can get these running on Apple TV. And I did. I figured out the trick there. And so I got them running on Apple TV. And then I thought, well, let's see what else I can do. So I started doing Quake 2, Quake 3, Return to Castle Wolfenstein, and then Doom 3. And I got them all running on iPhone and Apple TV. Wow. In a few cases, they were based off of, like, someone had done some of the work in the past, but it had stopped working.
Yep.
And so I was like, well, I'll just spruce it up or whatever. In the case of like Quake 2 and Doom 3, they'd never actually been running on iOS and tvOS before. So those were interesting to get going. When I was messing with Quake 3, I realized that it was based, the version that I was sprucing up was based off of IO Quake 3.
Okay.
Which is sort of the premier Quake 3 source port project. And in the course of working with that, I started sprucing up their Mac build or whatever, and I wound up kind of joining the project as a result. And when Apple Silicon came out, I figured out how to get the build on Apple Silicon. Some of the stuff, because it's our ARM64 processors on both the iPhone and Apple Silicon Macs, some of the techniques I had to use to get it running on the iPhone worked on Apple Silicon. So I got it building and run. I got it building, but what I didn't know is if it ran, because I didn't have an Apple Silicon Mac.
Okay.
This is 2020.
Yeah, when they first came out.
You know, and yeah, and I wasn't in a spot to buy one at that time.
Yep.
So I would occasionally get a hold of somebody that's, you know, had one. I was like, hey, could you try this out? And they're like, yeah, we ran it. It crashed. Okay, well, if I had one of these Macs, I could fix that, but I don't. And after a few months of this, the leader of the iQuake 3 project said, hey, why don't you crowdfund a Mac? We can use our social media to push it out there, get it out there, get the word out. And I was, felt a little guilty about that because, like, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Everybody's kind of hurting for cash or whatever. But I did it anyway. And it took a few months. And then one weekend, I sit down. I'm like, all right, there's this thing they've got now called signing and notarization.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the heck that is or whatever, but let's figure it out. Let's dig in and figure it out. So I spent a weekend doing that. And apparently, one, that got enough interest going in it that enough donations came in that I could buy a Apple Silicon Mac. And I just bought like the most basic, cheap M1 Mini.
Yeah.
I just needed something.
Yeah.
To run it on or whatever. And the second thing is, it turns out that was the problem in keeping it and why it was crashing, because Apple Silicon has this new requirement now that everything has to be at least ad hoc signed.
Okay.
On Intel, you can just run anything. I mean, it throws up the whole, are you sure it's damaged or you should throw this away thing, but you can run anything you want. On Apple Silicon, it has to at least be ad hoc signed.
Okay.
And so ran out over lunch, bought the M1 Mini, took it home, got it running, figured out that it worked. I thought, well, that's really cool. And then I thought, well, a bunch of total strangers on the internet have seen fit to buy me a free computer. The polite thing to do would be keep going with this. So I went and found a Quake 1 source port, VK Quake. It had builds already for Windows and Linux, but no, and instructions on how to build on a Mac, but didn't provide one. I thought, well, I can provide one. And then I found that YQuake 2 did something similar where, like, here's the source code, but we don't provide builds. And I thought, well, I can do it on Mac. So then I had all three Quakes, the open source ones anyway. And these were just hanging out on my GitHub. And I kind of had this thought of there should be some website that collects all these things.
Yeah.
So that's when I had the idea for Mac Source Ports. And so I just built the site, had the three games on it. And I kind of realized, like, I could fill this need because there's a lot of source ports out there and a lot of projects where here's the Windows build because everyone's got a Windows machine.
Yep.
Here's the Linux build because it's anybody with a spare easy PC has got a win. Yeah. But, you know, either they don't own a Mac or the person that did the Mac part left.
Yep.
And so I thought I could just be the person that does it for all these projects. And so I started looking for all these projects to do it with. And that's just kind of where we're at. All the stuff that I've been able to figure out how to do so far, I've got on the site, and I've got a backlog of like 100 different things to look at.
Okay. So as I understand it, you, as part of Mac Source Ports, I mean, like, and I think this goes into why a lot of these open source projects don't kind of natively support Mac sometimes. Because like you talked about the hardware, and I think maybe it's changed a little bit now, but like, for example, GitHub will give you free CI runners to build Linux and even I think Windows, right? But the Mac stuff, it's like you kind of have to own your own hardware. So as I understand it, you've actually built out like a entire kind of like build pipeline that you, an automated kind of CI pipeline to build these source ports. Is that correct?
Yes. I'm using, well, I've, like, in the years since I have purchased, I'm upgraded to an M1 Max, MacBook Pro or whatever, but I've still got the M1 sexy sitting on the desk over here. I just repurposed it as a, like, dedicated build machine. So just, it's running BuildBot is the software.
Okay.
And so it just sits there all day and looks for, have there been new check-ins? Have there, for the ones for the projects that have like atomic releases, like with version numbers and everything else, it looks for, is there a new tag? Because that's usually how they do it. And then it'll just build the project, you know, sign it up, put it in a DMG, all nice and pretty and so forth, and then sends me an email saying it's done. And for like the projects where there's atomic releases, I try to get it going on the site as soon as possible. For the sites where, for the ones where it's like, here's the latest check-in, they might do 100 check-ins in a day or whatever. So I'll just decide every so often, okay, now's a good time to upgrade or update the build on the site.
Very cool. And you have quite a bit of, it seems like, well, I don't know, but it seems like you, like a lot of the tooling is automated. Like, for example, whenever you push a new build, it posts on Mastodon, on Blues. I only use Mastodon. So I follow you on Mastodon and it's just like new build of whatever, Daggerfall available now. And I assume, is that all part of your CI build pipeline? Or you're not manually that pushing part, those out, are you?
That part I am. I'm manually pushing it in the respect that I've got, I think it's Metricool is the site I'm using or whatever, and it can post to a number of things like Blue Sky and so forth. It doesn't do Twitter because Twitter costs money.
Yeah.
And you can pay for that, but I haven't aspired to that level yet. It doesn't do Mastodon. I don't know why, other than they're lazy, because that seems like it'd be the easiest one to add. But it'll do Blue Sky and Instagram and all these other things. Yeah. So those are manual. I do have them automated in the respect that I've got a thing on the site that's like a little dashboard that tells me, all right, you know, here's the latest version. Here's the version you've got. Is it up to date? And then here's, you know, it'll conjure up the, here's what you need to paste into the window kind of thing. But that part's still manual. Long term, probably want to automate some of that too.
Yeah. I mean, for what it's worth, I'm a big Mastodon fan. Like, I don't know why, but I just like the kind of open nature. I'd be totally willing and happy to help out, you know, if I need to write just something to make your life easier. Mastodon has a just like the API. I've made little kind of Cloudflare workers that post to Mastodon and stuff like that. It's very easy to deal with. In fact, the hardest part I had with it was the server admins themselves, like having issues with like automated bot posting. Like I got temporarily banned one time. It's like, okay, whatever. But yeah, for what it's worth, I'd be happy to help if that's a need. And in fact, I don't know if you remember this, but I actually, it's super outdated now, but I love Homebrew on Mac. You know, that's how I install all my apps. I don't know, for whatever reason, downloading a DMG, opening it up, dragging in the application, then like unmounting the DMG and deleting it. I just hate doing that. I like to have my system, I'll have a brew file where I can just install all my apps. So I made my own Homebrew kind of, they have their own terminology. I basically took Mac source ports and I made it so you can install it via Homebrew, but it's extremely outdated. Like, I was like doing it manually, and for a while I was trying to follow you whenever you posted an update, but it's like, if it's just for me, like, you know what I mean? Anyways, I guess that's all to say is like, I guess I have spent a little bit of time pondering how that all works. So it's very interesting to hear about it. Yeah. So you have a dedicated M1 that's running your builds. And when you say signed and notarized and ad hoc signed, I know you explained this in the FAQ, but is that essentially just somebody with an Apple developer license that pays $100 a year has to build it and like then put their stamp on it to say this is legit kind of a thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that's kind of more complicated than it needs to be in some ways. It was a deal, like, go far enough back and the Mac would just run anything.
Yeah.
Like, you download a program, it runs it, there you go, which is kind of how, well, a little bit of how Linux and Windows still kind of work to this day. It started to do a thing where at some point they're like, okay, here's code signing. And so when you would download an application from the internet, like there's something at the operating system level that says this thing came from the internet, came from a zip file, whatever. And it would check to see if it had been signed. And if it had been signed by, signing is literally like done at the sort of the operating system level with command line tools and so forth.
Interesting.
And it could be anything from just, somebody ran the signing program with a certificate that they got from some authority to somebody ran the signing program with the certificate they've got as a result of being a registered Apple developer, even with a free account.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so you didn't actually, when it was just, when all they were worried about code signings, you didn't actually have to have a paid account. You could use a free one.
Interesting.
And then they added this thing called notarization. Notarization's a little bit different in that you basically, you sign the app, and then you have this thing submit it to Apple directly.
Oh.
Yeah, over the internet, and they run, and it's not like the App Store where a human being has to look at it and check it out and so forth. It's some automated process is scanning it and checking to see if it's got malware or viruses. Cool. And yeah, and it takes like just a few seconds or whatever, but when it'll come back, it'll be like, okay, here it is. You're good to go. Here's your token certificate or whatever. And then there's this action that you run that staples it. It's basically a file that's in the bundle that says here's the signature. Here's, you know, the hashes or whatever of all the things that are in here or whatever. If anything that looks different than this, it's not, then someone's messed with it basically. Cool. And that's when it will pop up and say, you know, this is, are you damaged. Sure you want to run this or, yeah, or the damage thing sometimes.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because, I mean, dude, I probably click through, you know, this file can't be opened, like, and then you have to go into settings and open anyway. I probably run into that, yeah, like, once a day, right? It's like, I don't know, like, the majority of the crap I install on my Mac, like, so, but then there's the other thing where it says this application is damaged. And so I was just wondering, like, so if the app isn't notarized and I try to open it, what happens? Does it say it's damaged and cannot be opened, or does it say do I have to go into system preferences and manually open it? Do you know?
It changes sometimes based on version of the operating system or circumstance, but sometimes when it says it's damaged or whatever, it means either has been signed or notarized, or it's been tampered with. I don't remember all the ins and outs. I've not actually run all the scenarios, but and sometimes it's that they've tried to sign it, but there's ways to do it wrong. The ad hoc thing, for example, you don't even need a certificate for that. It just basically says, I built this, here it is, here's the signature of it. If it changes, then someone messed with it.
Okay, I see.
And this whole thing, I mean, that was that whole thing like that I dug in that one weekend a few years back to figure this out, is that, you know, they do document it on their site. Here's how to do it. Here's the, you know, you can do it through Xcode. And then there's command line programs. They actually came out with one more recently that makes the process easier. Just to, you know, instead of having to run multiple things, you just ran this one thing and it'll wait. Like, it'll submit it. It'll check to see if it's done and then it'll come back.
Oh,
so that's nice. Yeah. But yeah, it's not the most clear cut procedure. I mean, it's easy enough to do through Xcode, but most of the stuff I want to do is command line. A number of these projects don't have Xcode builds, to say nothing of the fact that I don't want to have to open it up in Xcode to submit all the time. Kind of
thing. Yeah. Very interesting.
As a security thing, it does make macOS and the Mac as a platform very secure. As a convenience thing for developers, it's very confusing and kind of a pain in the butt. And then when you combine that with the fact that there's just fewer Mac gamers, yep, fewer potential customers, it's one of the reasons you get a lot of people like, I don't want to bother with that. And so that's kind of what my site does, is I'll bother with that.
And that's why, like, you just nailed it, man, because I'm a Mac gamer and, like, theoretically, like, I've committed to Aries emulator. Like, I've built stuff. I've opened Xcode. I've jumped through all the hoops. It's a total nightmare. Like, and so that's why when I can open up MacSourceForce.com, it is just like such a thing of beauty. And truthfully, like, you directly have made, because I don't know, it's like it's a snowball effect too, because it's like, man, I can actually game on my Mac and we can run it on Apple Silicon and get actually like the full benefit of this incredible hardware. Like, we're running, yeah, sure, it's Wolfenstein, or, you know, Return to Castle Wolfenstein or whatever, but it's like, dude, I've never played that game before. So it's a lot of these games, like, you know, I don't know, I remember them maybe being on the Xbox or the PC when I was a kid, but I've never messed with them. So truthfully, you have given me the ability to play some of these games that I've wanted to play my entire life, natively. Like, it's incredible. So again, thank you for jumping through the hoops, for figuring all this out for me personally. And then I also think, yeah, it is a snowball effect, because now we have crossover, we have options, even Apple with their game porting toolkit and some of their, you know, their DirectX compatibility layer, D3D Metal, things like this. It's like, man, Mac is now like a viable gaming platform. And in fact, yeah, if you want to go play Warcraft 2 or Command and Conquer Red Alert or something, it, like, you're just as good on a Mac as you are on a PC. In fact, you know, from a hardware perspective, you might be a little bit better on a Mac. So, yeah, it's made it. I think you're making a real impact. I was kind of curious, like, I can't imagine you have, but has Apple acknowledged what you're doing at all? Like, you know, they come out and they say gaming's important to them, and some things happen and some things don't. Have you ever had any kind of acknowledgement from them in any way?
Not directly. Not any direct contact or acknowledgement or whatever. There's a few people who, like, you know, hey, this person follows me on Twitter and they work at Apple. Hey, I've got a IP hit from Cupertino, so odds are decent that it's, you know, somebody Apple looking at something, whatever.
Yeah.
But no direct acknowledgement yet.
Well, I was kind of, yeah, because one thing I'm a big fan of, I don't know if you're familiar with Apple Arcade and what they're doing there, but it's kind of this, like, if you pay for their subscription, it gives you access to certain games. And usually it's like games that are already on the App Store, but they're like unlocked and ad free and maybe have all the DLC unlocked. But what I've really liked that Apple Arcade is doing is they're re-releasing kind of legacy IP. You know, we can put that in quotes. And so, I don't know. I just think I would love to see all of my favorite games, you know, get re-released on Apple Arcade, because the Apple Arcade stuff is sweet because it runs on all Apple platforms. It runs on Apple TV, Mac, iPhone. And so I guess I just was, yeah, I could very much see the skills and just getting legacy code to compile and run on a modern Mac be very useful to Apple. So anyways, just kind of interesting. I wanted to ask, so you said you started off with Doom and Wolfenstein 3D on iOS ports because, you know, back in the day, Carmack himself ported these and got them running on an iPhone, but Apple made the move to 64-bit, and they also deprecated any 32-bit application. So as of right now, you can't run a 32-bit application on any Apple platform, any modern Apple platform. So that was kind of your impetus, I guess, like Doom and Wolfenstein 3D. Were you just like naturally, like, I don't know, did you just wake up one day and say, like, man, I'd love to play Doom on my phone? Or what was it? Do you have a background in Quake? Like, what was it personally, your motivation here?
I mean, mostly it was just that I had the games. I mean, I bought them from the App Store or whatever. And, you know, when they announced, like, hey, by the way, the next version is not going to run 32-bit code anymore, there were a number of developers that went through and updated their games or whatever. And I noticed that id Software did not. And, you know, from what I understand of what was going on there, they just moved on.
Yeah. It's like these old builds, like, to get them working again, it's like it almost be as much work as it would to port it in the first place. You know, it's like, you know, firsthand how much effort that takes.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, one of the things I think happened is that, you know, these games originally being on there, I mean, first off, they had their own like mobile division for a while. And then I think they just kind of moved on from that. Those ports in particular, the Doom and Wolfenstein 3D, my understanding is they were basically Carmack's hobbies. John Carmack was the kind of guy that, like, his hobbies were lucrative. Yeah. So it kind of helps the whole open.
Yeah. Decide, hey, let's see if I can get Doom running on an iPhone. That'd be cool. Yeah.
Well, and he actually wrote it up in like a Word document that he included with the source files, essentially something to the effect of Downhead Entertainment, which his wife at the time was running, was doing a iOS game, and they had outsourced the development to some other company, and the version they had delivered didn't run very well. And they're like, you know, you need to make this run better on the iPhone. And they're like, oh, well, we'll need another 6 months and huge budget. And Carmack is like, screw that. So he just digs in and figures it out in like 4 days or whatever. And then he's like, well, let's see what else I can get going. And that's where the Wolfenstein port came from. Cause he's like, if that's the, you know, at the time there was this thing where, like if you connected your iPhone to Wi-Fi, you could just download anything you want. But if you were, if you wanted to download an app over 3G or whatever, you had to go through, it was like a 10 or 20 megabyte like limit.
Interesting.
Like there was a limit to how big of an app you could get on there.
It was like built into the OS.
The one game would, yeah, he's like, this is the one game we could have that could fit in that amount of space or whatever. So, yeah, he just kind of dug in and figured it out or whatever. And then he did the Doom one as well. And when I did the updates to the code, I thought, okay, well, I'm going to change as little as possible, just to the bare minimum to get it to run on modern versions of macOS. And then I'll do a pull request, so that way they can fix it. And I did the pull request and nothing ever happened with it. A message board I went to at the time had a few id Software employees on there. And so from comments they made, I'm aware that I believe that they were aware of it. They wound up going a different direction. They've never updated the Wolfenstein port. With Doom, they went a different direction. They basically had Nerve Software get it to run through Unity.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's still the original Doom game. It's just the part that says put the graphic on the screen, put the sound out, take in the input. It's being handled with Unity. And the advantage there is that Unity runs on everything. It runs on Android, runs on Switch, PlayStation 5, all that good stuff. So that was probably the right way to go with it. Plus, it looks like the old game. The version that they had running on the iPhone was using 3D acceleration, which was probably the only way it was going to run on the iPhone back then, because without 3D hardware acceleration, it just probably wasn't going to run fast enough.
Yeah.
But nowadays, of course, everything in your pocket is more powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, in fact, I'm thinking about, I don't know if you remember this game called Infinity Blade. It was like kind of like one of the first like big games on iPhone. It's like sweet, like Chair Entertainment got acquired by Epic Games, and they haven't updated it, right? Infinity Blade 1, 2, and 3 are dead. And in fact, I think that there is leaked source for Infinity Blade 1. And I think maybe somebody in the Mac Sourceboards Discord posted about it once. And I think I did run it on my Mac, but I don't know, man. It's just kind of like you said, it's a little bit frustrating to me that these IPs just kind of rot. It's just because lack of attention. And it's like it's like you said, from a financial point of view, it's like, oh, you want to hire some company to like get this port running? And they're like, yeah, we're going to need 6 months and $600,000 to do it. And it's like, you as just an independent guy can figure it out on your own and get it running. So I'm very thankful. I was curious with, you know, well, there's a lot going on with the iOS App Store right now. As far as the European Union forcing them to allow sideloading, we have now Epic. I don't even know the relationship there, but Epic Games has their own app store in Europe now. Riley Testet, the guy that developed the Delta emulator for iPhone, is involved with the, I don't know if they call it Alt Store or whatever they call it, but I was kind of curious, have you had any like requests for people? I guess I'm imagining, like you mentioned, right, you have a Doom 3 port building and compiling running on native macOS better than it's ever run, frankly. Have you had any people ask about iPhone mobile ports of these games that you already have compiling? And have you ever thought about maybe distributing them via these? I'm assuming that Apple probably wouldn't allow you to put that on the iOS App Store in the US. So have you ever thought about, you know, working with some of these third-party app stores to start distributing them that way?
No, not really. The way that whole thing is being played out, the way that they're implementing the alternate stores and so forth in the European Union, just kind of sounds like a nightmare, honestly.
Yeah.
The part where they're like, you need to pay us a licensing fee, even though getting off the App Store was the whole point of avoiding fees and so forth. I've not really messed with that. It is one of the things that like attracted me to doing all the stuff with the Mac versus the iPhone is that everything I was porting to the iPhone, it's you're fighting everything. These things were designed to be run on computers with keyboards and mice and OpenGL and so forth, and you're trying to run them on a device that has none of those things. It's got OpenGL ES, which is not the same thing. It doesn't have a keyboard or whatever. You have to put some controls on the screen. It's not a great way to play it and so forth. But getting these things building on the Mac, I mean, that's an easy fit. Plus, like, I couldn't put Quake on the App Store because I don't own the rights to it.
Yep.
And I could put something on the App Store that is not called Quake and come up with some sort of way for you to provide your own copy of the data files. And you could do that, but it sounds like a lot of work or whatever. And I'm the kind of person, for better or worse, I'm the kind of person that, like, what's the next project? I want to work on the next thing, right? I don't want to have to, like, you know, and when you start charging money for things, then you wind up having to support things and so forth.
Even if you don't charge money for it, I'm sure you get a fair amount of support requests via Mac Source Ports just for stuff you're distributing for free. Because some of it is a little bit complicated to set up. You have to put the application data in the right place and so on. Yeah. And yes, doing that kind of support, especially for free, I don't know. It's like, I commend you for being willing to do it. Yeah.
And when people I've actually got, because, you know, there are the FAQ is not lying. These really are frequently asked questions or whatever. And I try to help people when they email me as much as possible. But yeah, it was kind of frustrating because to this day, I'll still get emails saying, hey, could you send me a build of Quake 3 for the iPhone? And like, no, I can't send you. I can send you a build, but it won't run because that's how code signing works.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. The Mac has that advantage. It's the reason I don't bother to put these on the App Store either, because the same thing, you know, you'd have to call it something else, or you can't use the same name. And here I can just kind of do whatever I want.
Well, here we go. Apple, here's my pitch to Apple. If any Apple employees are working, specifically the people that work in the Apple Games, Apple Arcade division, look, if you want to stick it to Epic Games right now, let's get id Software games on iPhone, right? Let's get freaking Quake. Dude, if we could get a good Quake build on Apple, on iPhone, well, Apple Arcade on all the platforms, hook up a PS3 controller, they support it with networking, with NetPlay. Dude, we can make Quake a huge game again. If Apple gives us because they can do all the licensing. They can figure out all that kind of legal crap that is independent people. We don't have the money or time or even desire to do that. But Apple has armies of lawyers and PR people. So Apple, let's do it, man. Let's get some Apple Arcade releases of some evergreen PC titles. We can do it. It's open source. And I'm talking to Tom right now. He's the guy that knows how to build it. So that's my pitch to Apple. I would love to see it. And honestly, I think it's maybe possible. I think they're doing good stuff with Apple Arcade. In fact, I think my game of the year this year is an Apple Arcade original title. It's a Katamari Damacy sequel exclusive to Apple Arcade. I love it. So I wanted to ask, is there any Mac source port that you are particularly proud of having? Like, is there one that was like, I don't know, maybe you knew about it, but it was like just technically difficult that you now have able to distribute that you're very proud of?
I think looking at like download numbers is kind of interesting or whatever. I think the most popular thing I've got on the site, hands down, is Half-Life.
Really?
The Zesh 3D port. Yeah.
I mean, played through it. Yeah. That was the first time I'd played Half-Life was on your port, man.
It's had like 14,000 downloads or whatever. Something about that game and that series really attracts people, because that one was a deal where, like, Half-Life's source code, the Half-Life source code has never been released, right?
Yep.
The engine that they're using, that they're sort of retroactively calling a gold source. It's a long thing, because when they were building Half-Life, they had it in Visual Source Safe under the SRC source folder. And when they started working on Half-Life 2, they're like, all right, well, you know, we're going to upgrade this code and work on Half-Life 2, but we still need to provide updates for for Half-Life 1. So they made a fork. They made a copy of, you know, this is the version that went gold to the masters or whatever back when everyone bought their games on CD. And so that's the gold source. And so they just sort of retroactively, okay, that's source and that's gold source. And so that's the name of the engine. Gold source's code has never been released, but it was originally based on Quake 1 and 2.
Yeah.
They did put out a subset of it in the form of an SDK, and Quake 1 and 2 source code is out. So if you took Quake 1 and 2 source code and the SDK source code and banged them together hard enough, long enough, you could get it to work, which is what somebody did. I mean, we're talking 10 years worth of effort, plus it's like the second incarnation of the port. Yep. There was a guy that worked on it for a decade, and then he, you know, quit working on it, and then another group took it up. And it is, you know, people just are really attracted to that game and that series. Yep. So that's the most popular thing. But what's weird is my favorite port on the site that I don't know how many people ever downloaded or cared about. There was a game. So I'm looking for early on, I'm looking for like lists of games, because one of the things that I ran into is like the traditional route for source port was company writes a game. They come out with the game. It sells however many copies it's going to sell. They license the engine to whoever they're going to license it to. They've made most of their money with it, and then they're done with it. So let's give away the source code, and then source port projects show up, and then I build the source port projects most of the time. And what I was surprised to learn is that although there are many games that have done that, it's actually not that common. There's the other like path that I would see a lot is, you know, the source code's never been released, but somebody figured out how to write programs and code and so forth that run the game. And I knew there were projects like that. I didn't realize there were that many that had, because a lot of these projects start up and then crap, it's hard, and they quit. A lot more projects get to the point of being feasible than I realized, like OpenMW or F-Heroes 2 and so forth.
OpenMW, Open Morrowind, and F-Heroes 2, Heroes of Might and Magic 2?
Yes.
Excellent.
And yeah, and those projects actually get really far.
Yeah, OpenMW, I've played. It's great. And there's even like a multiplayer mod that you can run on the Mac, and it's like, yeah, dude, it's great. I love it. Yeah.
It's sometimes they become a real boy or whatever, where they actually get on like Steam or something like OpenTTD. I mean, those guys, they've got their own company, basically. They've got it on Steam. That's an cool industry. But early on, I'm looking for examples of source ports to build. I knew about all the ones like Quake and Duke 3D and so forth. But I'm looking at a list of games or whatever, and I'm like, what's the most recent game on this list? And so I sort, and the most recent one on that list was a game called Good Robot that came out in 2016. And the source code was released in 2019. It's one of those deals where the developer is a small developer, and like one of the guys was the programmer, and he went off and got a job from the game development company. And so he just put out the source for like the three games they put out.
Thank you.
And I looked at it, and it's like a side-scrolling, procedurally generated, roguelike little robot game or whatever, where you're flying through a thing and doing stuff. Pretty cool game. And they put out the source code, and no one had done anything with it. And the game was on Windows and I think Linux, and that's it. I thought, well, I wonder how hard it'll be to get it running on the Mac. So I get it to build, and I run it, and it actually runs and spins up and everything else. And then I'm in the game, and I can see the level, but I don't see the character I'm playing or the bad guys. I can see the little bullets I'm shooting, but I can't see the character. I'm like, okay, so something's up or something's wrong. And so I just took a chance and wrote to the dude and said, hey, I tried to get this running on the Mac, but I don't see anybody. He's like, he actually wrote back really quickly. He's like, it sounds like a shader issue. You might want to look at that. And I don't know anything about shaders or shaders languages, but I'm looking and like, well, this file here does this, and this file here does this, and this one seems to work. So let me put this change in this other file, and I fire it up and it works. And so I got it working. I put it on the site. And this is an example of a game that's fairly recent, or at least comparatively recent, and had never been on the Mac before. Because a lot of these like, here's the instructions to build on a Mac, or it used to run on the Mac and then it got cut off. This one's never run on the Mac before. And so that one was one of my favorite little entries on the site. And like I said, I don't know if hardly anybody noticed or cared, but I thought it was cool.
That is cool. And and honestly, you kind of touched on it, because, man, it's annoying to me as a Mac gamer, because a lot of times the only reason why we don't see a Mac port is for, essentially, they just need a guy to look at it, right? And they need someone to QA and make sure. Like, there's been modern games that I have to run on crossover. Okay, the bane of my existence, and you already touched on this, the bane of my existence is a Unity game with only Windows and Linux ports. It's like, bro, just click the button. Just export the Mac version. It's that easy. But no, they have to get someone to QA it, because then they have to support it and all this stuff. So here's my other pitch, man. Valve software. Okay, I have played Portal 2 on my Mac using a leaked source engine. I'm not going to say where I got it. I think Gabe probably emailed it to me himself. It runs, man. It runs so well, and it looks so good. So Valve, please contact Tom and ask him. Look, you can get Half-Life 2. Give him the source. We can get Half-Life 2. We can get Portal. We can get Left 4 Dead. We can get all these incredible games, evergreen titles. Portal 2 is just as relevant as it's ever been, right? Maybe I'm saying Portal 1. Portal 1 is the game that I've played. Portal 2, I think I did have to play through crossover. But even Portal 2, there's no excuse, man. Please, please give us native Mac ports of your excellent games. They're already done. It won't even cost you guys that much. Just hire Tom. You can give it a pass. We can get it on Steam, and I'll buy it, man. I'll buy Portal. I would love to buy Portal on my Mac. So that's my second plug is, if you are an independent game studio that has a great game and just need someone to build it for you, or even, QA it a little bit. Not only is Tom a talented developer, but you've also built a nice little community, a Discord server that I've been a part of for maybe a year or two now. And it's great. I love hanging out in there. People offering tech support, just helping people play games on their Macs. So please, we would love to help you get. Yeah, I would love to see. There's no excuse for Portal not to be running natively on an Apple Silicon. And it's like you said, back in the day, maybe in 2006, Mac gaming became important to Valve at one point, and they did all these ports and got a 32-bit build running on Intel. But, it might, at this point, you're better off trying to run the original Windows release through crossover than trying to run some old janky 32-bit Intel build, right, on Apple. So that's my second plug. And hopefully I'm okay to say that, but you have demonstrated a passion and an ability to do that. And Valve, I know Valve, they're privately owned. They're not controlled by lawyers and corporate legalese. They have the ability. Gabe, if somebody at Valve is looking at this, please give us native Mac ports of your awesome games. We want to keep playing them. The reason why I bought an Xbox 360 in high school was to play the orange box, to play Portal. I cried, man. I played through Portal using the leaked source, and it made me cry, dude. Like, these games still have so much value, and for them to just be wallowing without care or attention, it's just sad to me. So let's make it happen.
Yeah, I think one of the things that makes, in general, it's very rarely the case that there's some game that literally would not run. Yeah. Period.
Yep.
On a Mac or whatever. Sometimes there's technical hurdles.
And for a long time, Mac hardware sucked, dude. It was like, I played Bioshock 2 on my Intel Mac, and it was like, it melted the thing. But Apple Silicon is so good. Let's take advantage of it, right? Yeah, sorry, I interrupted you.
It's rarely the technical reason that it is literally impossible. It is sometimes the reason that it would require a level of work that's not necessarily commensurate with sales. I mean, as much as the Steam Play thing, where you buy the game and you get it on Windows and the Mac, that's great for consumers. It's not necessarily great for developers, because it's like, you could do all this work to make your Mac build, and then you have, you might have statistics that say, here's how many people are playing it on the Mac versus Windows versus Linux. But you don't necessarily have any way to translate that to, here's how much money you made extra that you didn't already make. There are people on this, on Reddit and so forth, that held off, when they announced that they were going to put Cyberpunk on the Mac. They held off on buying it until the Mac version released to send the signal, I bought this because it's on the Mac.
Yep.
Whether or not that's the right correlation causation, I don't know, but
I've seen that advice. Yeah. Like, if you're going to like, I bought Crossover, right? Crossover's sweet. I'm like, it's incredible technology, but even if I'm going to buy a Windows game and play it on Crossover, I specifically buy it through the Mac version of Steam or whatever it is to send that signal to say, look, this guy's buying a game that he can't even play. Like, what's up with that? And maybe we should look at that.
Yeah. But generally, the number one reason, I mean, it's just what we just talked about. The number one reason a game's not on the Mac is business.
Yeah.
Just business reasons.
Come on, dude. We're gamers.
It doesn't help that the Mac has been... The Mac is a platform that's not afraid to change and say to hell with the past. Partially because, I mean, a lot of Apple's decisions make sense when you look at the lens of they're a hardware company.
Yep.
They want you to buy their hardware. They want you to buy new hardware.
Yep.
So they're not afraid to do things like, let's change the processor three times. You know, the Mac as a named platform has been through, you know, there was the Motorola, then PowerPC, Intel 32, Intel 64. Most people just kind of count that as one. I do think there are a lot of situations where if you've got a game on Windows from the 90s as an executable, it'll still run on Windows 10 or 11 because Microsoft has the backwards compatibility religion.
To their detriment, yes.
Yeah.
That's why they couldn't call it Windows 9, right? They had to skip it because of Win 9. That's what I heard, anyways.
I've heard that too or whatever, and that would...
It makes sense.
That would totally make sense, yeah. but, you know, like, for example, Postal is, you can still download the Mac version. They don't advertise it, but you can still download the Mac version off of GOG, but it's an Intel 32-bit app because that's two different architectures we got, right? I do think that it's settled down. Maybe this is me being naive, but, like, a lot of things in technology are about let's reduce the number of dependencies. Let's reduce the number of external dependencies and bring it internal is the final frontier. I don't see Apple 10, 15 years from now going, screw it. We're going to use AMD chips.
Yeah.
Like they're probably all, you know, we're the $1 trillion company. We're probably always going to just, you know, they make the processor now. So we're done.
Yeah.
So, I think that, you know, if you have a game that you get to run on Apple Silicon now, the odds are pretty good that it will either continue to run in the future or at least be trivial to update.
Yep.
You know, macOS does make surprising number of like sweeping changes, like on a yearly cadence with their releases. But you know,
the architecture is not going anywhere anytime soon, and I think it's been proven that ARM architecture is. I mean, okay, if we say Moore's Law is dead, like Intel's business model through the 90s, the 80s, 90s, and 2000s is no longer viable. And we're seeing the effects of that right now. We don't have to get into that because unfortunately it's even political now. But ARM is the future. And I actually wrote on my blog, I wrote a historical fan fiction of the history of graphics APIs. I say historical. We'll get into the JFK... a grassy knoll game you made, but I wrote a historical fan fiction of the history of graphics APIs on macOS. Like, and I did point out the conclusion that it's like, look, dude, for the first time, I think ever, I think a company, we have complete vertical integration. Apple, they have Metal, they have their own graphics API, love it or hate it, they have their own graphics API. They make their own graphics chips, they make their own processors, they're writing the drivers, they own the OS. Not even Microsoft has never achieved that. Not even close. Maybe with the Xbox platform, but even then, it's like they're using third-party vendors and stuff like that. And even like on the latest iPhone, the cheap one, the 15e, Apple shipped their own modem, man. Like, that's incredible stuff. So I think it's like you said, it's like Apple has built this incredible platform. Finally, we have powerful Mac hardware, more powerful than a lot of the equivalent non-Apple hardware. We have a great platform. Let's utilize it. And that's And that's what makes Mac Sword Sports possible. It's like, man, not only can I run Half-Life on my Mac, it runs well. Like, I remember trying to run Portal on an Intel Mac, and it was terrible. And now I can run it natively, and it runs so incredibly well. I can crank it up to 4K. I can bump up the refresh rate, you know, past 60 hertz if I want to. I think there's a great opportunity. And honestly, I think that we're starting to see the benefits of that. I played Death Stranding, the Mac native port on my Mac. I love Death Stranding. I never, ever would have played that game if there wasn't a native Mac port. Same with Cyberpunk 2077. It's like, maybe it would be fun to play, but now that there's a Mac port, that opens it up. I'm still probably not going to drop $80 on the App Store for it. I think they charge $80 for it. But maybe down the line, you know, if it ever, well, Apple doesn't have sales on their apps like Steam does, so maybe at some point I'll play Cyberpunk, but it won't be anytime soon. And the other thing that I think about a lot too is Apple TV is a gaming platform. It's a very viable platform for gaming. You know, the chip is what it is, but I've gamed on my Apple TV, right? Katamari Damacy Rolling Live, the game that I mentioned earlier, runs just as well on my Apple TV as it does on my Mac. There's a game called Beast. It's like an arena shooter that I play with my kids, and it's so awesome. Like, my youngest is on his iPad playing, my oldest is on the Apple TV playing, I'm on my Mac with a mouse and keyboard. So we have a great platform, and I think we'll continue to see. Apple has demonstrated that they are committed long term. Like, they're making updates to D3D Metal, to Game Porting Toolkit year over year, and they're doing great work with that. And they've shown a willingness to work with third parties, right? Because the Code Weavers, the crossover people, I believe that Game Porting Toolkit is literally like crossover. Like, it's Apple's just buying them a crossover license. So they've shown willingness to work with third party companies to get gaming on Mac. And yeah, I think that what you're doing is instrumental in all of this, really. Like, I don't think it's just like some random guy doing some random thing. It's like, dude, Half-Life is a legit game, man. And I played it for the first time ever in 2024 on my Mac, and it was awesome, man. I had so much fun playing Half-Life. I kind of have personal thoughts. I don't think a first-person shooter should ever have jumping. Like, if you can jump in a first-person shooter, it's actually a platformer, not a first-person shooter. So I'm kind of like, I have personal opinions on that, but that was a little bit of a rant. But I think what you're saying is very, very true. It's like, this is a, like, seriously, Valve, if you hire Tom to get Portal running on Mac and you can put it on Steam, we will play it, and we'll play it for years and years and years to come.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have the philosophy of, in order for Mac gaming to ever be like the big viable thing we want it to be, a number of things are going to have to happen. Key amongst them, like, Apple has to get serious about it. And they have to sink money into it and do it for a long time.
Yep.
Like, Microsoft has been at this forever. Yep. You know, they've been doing this since the 90s or whatever.
Thanks to Gabe.
They eventually made their own. Yeah, they made their own, you know, hardware platform on it and so forth. Apple is, you know, if we count, you know, Game Porting Toolkit is sort of like they're like, we're getting serious about this thing. You know, they're maybe about 4 years into this, and, yep, and they're keeping it up or whatever. I don't know that they're pushing hard enough, per se. Yep. I mean, like, Death Stranding's great, but probably because Apple sent them a bunch of developers to work with them for a long time or whatever. And, you know, some of these Mac OS ports, especially the ones that were on the App Store or whatever, you know, Apple, you know, Hideo Kojima's at the WWDC or whatever. They're working together.
Yeah.
But a lot of things are going to have to happen or whatever. Apple needs to keep going at this and be serious for an extended period of time. And one of the things I think that needs to happen is you need to kind of have this belief that because the Mac gets upgraded, your old games don't run anymore. And so this site is sort of like my little contribution to that. Like, to the extent that, like, okay, well, you know, Quake 3 still runs, but somebody needs to build it and do the work or whatever, I can do that.
Yep.
So that's sort of like my contribution to the overall thing. One thing, though, weird analogy, because that's what I'm good at, is I remember when I was in high school, I liked to be different in ways that were kind of stupid and pointless.
Yeah.
I liked, so like everyone had a Nintendo or a Sega. I wanted something different. So I went and got an Atari Jaguar.
Heck yeah.
The 64-bit system back when everything else was 16-bit. And there's a lot of asterisks to that 64-bit. But the Jaguar did a number of things really well. It had a great port of Doom that Carmack himself ported. And then like had to go find, he years ago was like looking for a proper home for the development kit because, you know, he's like somebody that would really appreciate this needs to have it. It had Tempest 2000. That was great. It had, it has a smattering of games from there that were great. And it had some graphic stuff that it could do that nothing else could do at the time. What sucked about having an Atari Jaguar is that you basically kind of had to have your like version of everything else or whatever. Your friends are buying, your friends are playing Mortal Kombat and you're playing Kasumi Ninja. Your friends are playing Star Fox and you're playing Cybermorph. Like it's Cybermorph. Just not the same. What was fun about the having the Jaguar as a platform though was this kind of rooting for the underdog feeling. Like I'm one, you know, every game on the Super Nintendo had a strategy guide. There was one strategy guide for the Jaguar that just covered all the games. Like they didn't have enough games to justify
strategy books guide for the whole system. That's funny.
For the whole system, yeah. And there was I found it because this is before the web, right? I found a news group of Atari Jaguar players, and it's hilarious in hindsight because everyone's talking about it like, oh, one of these days the scales are going to fall from everyone's eyes and they will see that we are the better platform, and it never happened.
Yeah,
but it was just kind of fun to root for the underdog, and on some level saying I'm a Mac gamer and I'm going to play Death Stranding and Cyberpunk on the Mac is sort of a rooting for the underdog thing. Now the analogy, you know, Atari was circling the drain in the Jaguar days, and Apple is a $3 trillion company, so it's not really the same thing, yeah, underdog wise or whatever. But it is just kind of fun to like root for Mac gaming, root for this this platform.
Well, like, and I just feel like, dude, I've worked for Silicon Valley startups, I've worked with a lot of engineers, and we all run Macs. You know, some of us run Linux, but truthfully, the most like it's. I don't know, modern developments happening on Mac. I don't want to alienate anybody by saying that. I use Linux too. But dude, the fact that we like, you know, your startup shows up, they buy a $3,000 top of the line MacBook, and that person has to then go build a Windows 11 gaming PC just to play a game, or go buy a PlayStation or go buy a Xbox just to play. Yeah. Death Stranding or Cyberpunk 2077. It's like, it's too bad, you know, like it's like Apple, don't shoot yourself in the foot. Like we don't, and honestly, we don't even need that much support from you. Like, again, I think what they're doing with Apple Arcade is great, but just, yeah, like kind of meet us halfway a little bit. And I'm optimistic that we can do it, but there is a culture in Apple that needs to change. And I think it hopefully is, but as the underdog, yeah, that's what I mean, dude. I just love gaming on my Mac. I love Apple Silicon, man. I love using the hardware that I paid for to its fullest extent. Like I can export a video. I can be a creative professional. And frankly, this is the vision that Steve Jobs had for computing in the 90s. Like he wanted every home to be a full creative studio where we can do art, movies, play games, make music. And I do that on my Mac. And so it's like, yeah, let's get, I think in the past Apple has, you know, I know I've read interviews with Gabe Newell talking about, he said, you know, every couple of years, somebody from Apple will call us up and say, oh, gaming is so important to us. Gaming is so important to us. And we'll fly down to Cupertino and have a meeting with them. And we'll say, look, here's the things we need. And then we'll never hear anything from them again. And I think Apple is demonstrating, well, again, I'm optimistic, but even like, honestly, when Game Boarding Toolkit came out and then they updated it the next year and then they updated it the year after that, like that blew my mind. Like when Game Boarding Toolkit came out, I was like, yeah, this is like, it's a throwaway. We'll never see this, you know, they'll never talk about this again. And it's like, nah, dude, like they're like every keynote, they're talking about what they're doing with gaming and game porting and ray tracing and all that stuff. So I'm optimistic. And honestly, you know, the quote, if you build it, he will come. You know, we always say if you build it, they will come. Apple, you've built it, man. And we're here. Let us in, you know, like open the gates for us. That's how I feel. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and in that vein, I mean, like I'm like one of the things I'm kind of always bracing for with Max War Sports is the day that I make somebody mad.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, I've had nothing. I mean, I've been doing this for almost 4 years now or whatever, and I've had nothing but like good interactions with folks so far. So knock on wood, but I'm always kind of bracing for the day they get someone upset. There are Swordsport projects out there that are doing some amount of their own work. And then here I am making a build or whatever. And I'll coordinate with them or whatever. But then I've had a few that have basically said, actually, could you just do our Mac builds? So like, you know, I'm part of the Core 6 TH. I don't know if team is the right word, but like basically they coordinate where they're like, hey, we're about to do a release. Can you get this pushed? I'm like, yeah, sure. And I'll just upload the build to their site. One of the projects that I help is the Daikatana 1.3 project or whatever. And as far as I can tell, the origin of that is those guys basically said, hey, John Romero, we think we could fix up Daikatana, but we need the source code. And he's like, here, just don't give it to anybody. And so that one actually uses the source code, but it's not public. It's not published on their site or whatever. And I that was another one where I went to them, like went to the site to download it. And it's a 32-bit app. And I was like, hey guys, I can help you build this. They're like, yeah, here's the repo. You know, don't give the source to anybody, but you can build it all you want or whatever. Wow. And so I'm perfectly good with like being on board with projects where maybe the source isn't public. But if you need someone that can be on there. So I'm like handling the official builds for Core 6 TH, Devolution X.
Oh, you are doing Thank you for Devolution X, man.
Yeah, I mean, they were making their own Mac build, but they're like, yours is signed and notarized and stuff, so screw it, we'll let you do it. It's fine. And the Doom 3 project, DHEWM3. So I'm just kind of handling those builds semi-officially or whatever. So
for real, man, and like, honestly, Valve, so, like, hit Tom up.
So maybe wants to reach out and like, you know, like, I'll sign whatever thing.
For real, so, like, and it's not like Portal's like being updated. Like, they're not like, it's like, you know, you could get it up and running. Literally, you could spend the time to do it one time, and every Mac gamer would benefit for the rest of time, right? It's like, it's not like, oh, every week you're gonna have to like hop on a call with Valve and like go over the latest Portal updates and like, no, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about evergreen properties, evergreen IP. It's done. It's out. It's released. Dude, like, give me the ability to buy it and play it. Like, don't force me to emulate it. Don't force me to go buy a Windows computer. Yeah. That's really cool to hear. And honestly, with Devolution X, I played your Mac Sourceport. I actually played through Diablo 1 with my brothers for the first time. You know, I played it back in the day on the PC, but we went through and we played it. And the other nice thing that I like, because retro games, like, in hindsight, it's like, there were just things, maybe there were bugs, or maybe there were just kind of design oversights. And so it's with a thing like Devolution X, like, they have quality of life improvements that just make these games more enjoyable to play than ever. Like, just I honestly can't even remember the quality of life improvements in Devolution X, but I know it's like, dude, if we didn't have this, it doesn't change the experience of playing the game, other than it would just be worse. Like, it would just be more annoying. Like, you have to jump through hoops, or maybe like menu optimizations and things, like just basic things. We're not talking about like, oh, we're gonna like totally redesign the first level. It's like, no, we're saying like, instead of having to click three buttons to do something, now we can click one button to do it, kind of an idea. So yeah, and yeah, so we'll again hit my buddy Tom. I know this guy, he's really good at making Mac source boards. You can go to his website, MacSourceSports.com, and he's such a good guy that he's willing to do it for free. I would like to, you know, we kind of talked briefly yesterday about a Patreon. I noticed you do have a Ko-Fi set up for people to donate, which I haven't done, and I need to and should, and I'm sorry about that. But a Patreon, I do think it's a good idea, just because there's people in the Discord that are passionate about this stuff. And I kind of made the joke, it's like, you never know who's a royalty that just has an extra $1 billion laying around. Like, there are there are people out there, you know, there are people, it's not like people have money and they'd be willing to give you some. So I definitely think you should do you should look into that for sure.
Yeah, because I mean, there are ways I'd like to expand the operation, so to speak.
Oh, okay.
Like, I don't have like grand ambitions of like, you know, ever making this a full-time job necessarily, but like, for example, like, I can build for Intel 64-bit and Apple Silicon fairly easily or whatever, there's a few projects that will still support all the way back to PowerPC Max, but I don't have any PowerPC Max. And so I'd like to be able to like get more hardware, get more things to test on.
I was going to ask
push about out the operation a bit
because because I'm focusing on Apple Silicon, right? Like that's, I don't have an Intel Mac, but I did find it curious that you do support the older, the Intel Macs. What's even more interesting to me is being in your Discord server. People are doing that. What am I trying to say? Like people will say like, hey, I'm trying to get whatever running on my like old 2004 Mac or whatever. Like, are these people, are they legitimately using these systems like as a daily driver just out of necessity? Or are they like Mac enthusiasts that just like want to see if they can play Diablo on, you know, a kind of a period accurate Mac? Do you know?
I think it's probably a little more of the just retro computing enthusiast community. There are a few people that still legit use. I just had someone write me this morning or overnight basically saying like, hey, have you ever had they have a Mac Pro from 2013 and they've got it running on the latest version of Mac OS via the Open Core Legacy Patcher project or whatever, but GC Doom locks up the whole system. They haven't run into that. It's like, nope, I'm not running into that.
Good luck.
Maybe try an older one or whatever, but what I run into a lot of actually is people who either they bought a Mac because they liked it, their friends all run them or whatever kind of a thing. You know, everyone else in the classroom is running this or whatever. I better do it kind of a thing. And or maybe they need it for work or whatever. And they didn't necessarily understand the relationship between operating system choice and video game compatibility, muddied by the fact that there's Steam for the Mac and there's games for the Mac. But then you get on there like, oh, wait, the one game I want to play doesn't run for whatever reason. And so they want a game on their Mac, but they didn't really understand that, like, you know, you can't run Doom Eternal on the Mac, that sort of thing. But they enjoy the site because I've got all these old games you can get for free, get the latest builds for free and so forth. The other thing I run into a lot of is people who bought the Mac knowing that there was this, you know, like this is the thing I'm going to use for work. I'm going to build my, you know, site in React or whatever and my entire thing or whatever. And I'm not worried about playing games on this thing. And they get the Mac and they get their MacBook Pro and they're like, this is a really nice machine. This is really the great screen and fast and so forth. It'd be great if I could play some games on this or whatever. And then it's one of the things, like, I organize the site primarily by game.
Yep.
Right. Because, you have someone out there, like, they want to play Doom. They might guess that GZ Doom can play Doom, but really they just want to find, like, how do I play Doom?
Yeah, you're like on some GitHub and people, like, it's even like go to the releases tab and it's like, oh, which one do I click? It's like,
yeah,
it's confusing for people.
I've had a few people comment that I should link to the GitHub release instead of the download link is always a direct link to the file, the zip file.
No, I like that because you control it. It's consistent.
Yeah, and I have just, it's been my experience that, you know, for the less technically inclined user, if you send them to a GitHub release page, they're lost.
Yep.
Like they might, you know, depending on what they label the file, but like if it's like, you know, ARM64.dmg or whatever, they might guess that that's the right one, but they might
not. Or there's like universal, they're like 64-bit, like universal.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, man. I just want to play Doom. Yeah.
Yeah, plus like every GitHub release page has at least two more links for the two different zips of the source code.
Yep.
And it's just, you know, it's one of the reasons why I'm like, I don't have any problem with someone doing a homebrew tap of the stuff on the site, but it's been my experience that like there's folks out there who do not want to mess with the command line.
Yep.
They don't want to mess with the command line. They don't want to type in a thing. They want to click on the thing, drag the thing to the thing and play the thing.
Yep.
That's what they want to do. And I'm trying to lower the friction as much as possible. Yep. The whole putting files in library application support, the user specific one, not the system wide one or whatever, that does confuse people.
But that, and I try, honestly, to
explain it as well as possible.
I don't think that's your fault. Like, application support is an anti-pattern that just exists in macOS. Like, I don't know why the heck they do it that way. It's like they need to just stop doing that. Like, it's just confusing.
Well, in the world where, like, if you're downloading a game that already has the data in the app bundle, it's not that big of a deal, because application support is just going to be where the save game files are, and no one cares. You know, the average person doesn't care where the save game files actually are. But in the pattern of, you know, like when there's the new app bundle, you just want to drag the new app bundle into applications, have it overwrite what's there or whatever, and not overwrite your saved files, the data and so forth. So you need to have it in a third party place or whatever, but it could be a slightly more intuitive thing. I mean, VK Quake, for example, actually does not use application support. You actually have to just have the id one folder next to wherever you have VK Quake, but that's not the most compatible. And I should probably look into like tweaking that or whatever, or making a different option or whatever, because that's like the most, that's not the most compatible thing with the application folder where you just have the bundles and you don't want a bunch of random folders and files.
Yep.
And so, yeah, it's still, a lot of this is just kind of holdovers from the decisions they made when they were writing Next Step back in the day. And so,
yeah.
But that's what I run into a lot of is people who, they just kind of want the lowest friction way of playing the game.
I mean, truthfully, it's so like,
that's what I try to do.
I mean, truthfully, it's like, I would assume that a fair amount of the people that are using, like, okay, just like as a matter of fact, like the people who have the most time to play video games are usually children, like kids, you know? And so it's like, there's like some 10-year-old kid, 12-year-old kid, maybe he has a MacBook for school, maybe they're using their dad's old computer or something like that, and he's like a like just getting into retro gaming, and it's like, yeah, it can be confusing and hard to learn. So that's why, yeah, the way that you do it, I just really like the whole process. The website's clean. It speaks to legitimacy. Like, I don't feel sketchy, and especially like how you explain what you're doing and all that. Like, I have a high level of trust in MaxSourceSports.com. I hope you haven't covertly installed a virus on my computer, but I've been using MaxSourceSports long enough now that I don't think that that's the case. You're intrinsically motivated just to make gamers' lives easier. I guess I wanted to ask, is there any source port, or is there any work you've done on Mac source ports that you kind of like regret? Like, I know certain games have like very passionate communities, and maybe sometimes there can be weird stuff there, but is there anything that's been like kind of difficult for you that way?
There's a few. Well, so one of this kind of squishy things is like, what's the definition of a source port? Like, you know, Quake 3, that's a source. Quake 3 is a source port. Yeah. It's the original game source. It's ported to a new thing.
Licensed under GPL. It was released open source.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, so the ones that they create the source code from scratch, is that technically a source port? I'm calling it that, but it didn't derive from the original or whatever. That's not a big deal. But then there's a few source ports that are on the site that I've got them there just because it's, especially if you've done all the work, if you've done the, you know, here's, it's signed, it's notarized and so forth, and it's a third party thing, I'm good with linking to it or whatever, especially since it will let you play the things that people want to play. But they're not really source ports so much as they are like reflection efforts. Like, they're taking the original code and making it, you know, reflecting and so forth. And those, in some cases, like, you don't even have access to the source code. Like, one of the ports on the site is Dream, DREAMM. And that is not, this guy is not going through and writing like new engines for, you know, Dark Forces or Outlaws or whatever. What he's doing is he's got a program that's taking the DOS executable and getting it to run. And it's good in the respect that it allows you to play all these old games on your modern Mac, but it also means that you can't as easily add quality of life improvements, right? It's going to run at the resolutions it ran in DOS, just stretched to your screen.
Yep.
It's going to have all the quirks of the old DOS versions or whatever. It's still a good way to play the game.
Yep.
And that one's okay. I keep getting requests to put on the site. People have gone through and decompiled like some of the like Sonic games for the Xbox 360. And that gets into a little bit of like iffy territory. Yep. But there is one I linked to. It's the Sonic Mania. Where someone has gone through and decompiled and recompiled Sonic Mania. And I'm kind of okay with that one just because you'll still need the game, the data from the original
and you
game.
Can buy it. It's on the store. You just go to, where do you buy right. from Steam or GOG and download the file. It's like, you need to own the files, but here's basically an application that can now run them. Yeah.
Yeah. But the, but like, you know, there's a line at which you're, you know, like if you cross this line, you might get an email from somebody and, or whatever. The thing,
you
don't want
to
do that.
You don't want to touch with a 1,000-foot pole as any of the Nintendo source ports. It's so disappointing, you know, because it's like, how do I want to say this? I have seen Super Mario 64 PC port running on a Mac with all the modern graphics and everything. And it's by far the best way to play Super Mario 64, no matter what Nintendo says. But man, it's like, dude, as soon as you have anything Nintendo related, like, yeah, we can't touch that with a 1,000-foot pole. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. Cause there are, it's cool stuff, man. It'd be sweet to be able, like literally yesterday I was trying to get the Star Fox 64 PC port running on my Mac, and it's just like more effort than I think I probably want to put into it. Like, I just kind of want to see how it runs. You know, I don't know if, like, it's not really worth figuring it out for me. And it's like, man, somebody like you, like, they have, it's exactly what you're describing. They have Windows, Mac, or Linux, Steam Deck versions, but and they have instructions to compile for Mac, but they just don't have somebody that's willing to actually do that, you know, regularly. And it's like, somebody like you is so well equipped to just start, oh, here's a Star Fox 64 PC port download for your Mac. But man, we can't do that, right? Like, yeah, it's too bad. Maybe someday. And maybe Apple can help us, man. Like, I would love, if anybody could collaborate with Nintendo, I think it would be Apple. So, I mean, then they already have with Super Mario Run and things like that. So,
an interesting thing, like you mentioned earlier, like, you know, people like, hey, reach out kind of thing or whatever. I've recently started, I've been in communication with, Rebecca Heineman, who, I don't know if you're familiar with her at all. She is a legendary old school programmer. I've kind of described her as it's sort of like your favorite band's favorite band. Like, you know, your average gamer at QuakeCon knows who John Carmack is. They might not know who Rebecca Heineman is, but John Carmack damn knows where Rebecca Heineman is.
She's
done a million things. She was one of the co-founders of Interplay.
Cool.
Back in the day.
Very cool.
She legendary for a port. She ported Doom to the 3DO on contract, which Doom to the 3DO is not a very good port. So the part that makes it legendary is that she had to do it just a few weeks because the original publisher lied to her about how far along it was, and she kind of had to just get it working in a few weeks from scratch.
Legendary.
And she was one of the founders of, Interplay had a sub label called MacPlay.
Okay.
Interplay, MacPlay makes sense. And that's where they put out their Mac versions of games. And Interplay is gone the way of the dodo, and MacPlay has been bought and sold a few times. And apparently she bought it either late last year or early this year.
Really?
And so she's resurrecting it as a Mac publishing label. And so she reached out to me. It's like, I'd like to work with you or whatever. Because a couple of years ago, it was like she reached out to me saying, fan of your work. I was like, that's cool. I'm a fan of yours too. And so we've chatted or whatever. We hung out at QuakeCon. Me and my wife had dinner with her or whatever. We're talking about, I have no idea what collaboration, what form, what, you know, what it'll look like or whatever. But her, you know, her intended business model is like her pitch is basically, you know, your games could be running on the Mac and making you some more money. And so
and
she's got connections. So, I'm really interested to see where that goes and so forth, and to what form I could work.
Because if MacPlay or her company and you guys could simply, what I'm talking about, do that final QA step, clicking export in Unity or whatever it needs to happen, you know, get a person to just look at it and try to run it before you release it on Steam. That's a very, it seems to me that there's a lot of need in the game, in the Mac gaming. And I think that could be a very successful business model. So that's very exciting for me to hear about, especially knowing that she has the connections. And you mentioned QuakeCon. I did actually want to ask you about QuakeCon. You went to QuakeCon recently. When was it? In July?
It was earlier in August.
August? So. Oh, it was this month.
Yeah.
Is that something you normally participate in? Or are you just kind of into the Quake community that way? Or what's the backstory there?
This year was the 26th year that I've gone.
Wow.
I went to QuakeCon 99 because I won a Blues News contest. And I didn't go to 2000 because I had a conflict that year. And then I've been in one form or another every year since 2001. Really? Most of the time I bring my computer. I go to the whole BYOC thing. And for 3 years there, for 2020 through 2022, it was just a virtual event because of the pandemic and all. But they brought it back in 2023. And yeah, it's huge. It's this like 4,000 person LAN party.
So cool.
Yeah. There was a meet and greet this year at for id Software or whatever. Like, you just went down and everyone had this poster that you could sign. And so I just went there or whatever. And I'm talking to Marty Stratton, and I've got my Mac Sourceport t-shirt on. And I'm talking to him, and Rebecca Heinemann was there, and she was further up in line than me or whatever. And I talked to Marty Stratton about it. It's like, yeah, I get this website, Mac Sourceport shirt and so forth. We're getting old games like Quake and Doom to run on the Mac. And the very first thing he said was, oh, have you met Rebecca? Yes.
Incredible.
Yes, I have. We are in contact. Yes. It's a lot of fun. It's sort of the thing I jokingly tell my wife is like, it's me pretending like I'm still 20 years old for 3 or 4 days. Like,
excellent.
Stay up till 3 a.m, get up the next day. And
so that's what it is for you. You go to QuakeCon primarily to play Quake. I mean, obviously it's the whole thing, but you're a Quake gamer. You play Quake.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool.
And, I mean, and it's a little less of this in recent years, just because of, I don't know, economics or business or whatever. But like, for a while there, it was also, they'd have the BYOC, but then they'd have this big section that was like a big show floor. It was like a big sort of like a mini E3 or whatever. They've backed off of that in recent years. But yeah, it's still like it. That's when they'll announce the games. In 2014, they showed Doom 2016 for the first time.
Wow.
And it was one of those, like, everyone in this room gets to see it. None of y'all have video cameras out, you know. Don't ruin this for everybody kind of thing. That's so y'all awesome. Get to see the game like a year before everyone else does.
Sounds like a really cool way for id to engage with their community in a really positive way, you know? And
it started out literally like as a like fan run thing. Like in 1996, it was like 50 people from an IRC channel. The QuakeCon was actually just for conversation.
Oh.
It was, and they just rented out a conference room at like a Holiday Inn in Mesquite or whatever, where id was. And then the last day, and id Software found out about this. And the last day they just showed up and hung out with them and stuff. And they've been having it every year since. I think a few years in, like, you know, the people that were originally starting it, like at some point it becomes bigger than they want to mess with.
Yeah.
And so id Software is like, well, how about we'll take it over because this is a freaking convention for our games.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it evolved a bit over the years. You know, Bethesda bought id, and then Microsoft bought Bethesda and so forth, but it's still going.
That's cool. That's very cool. Yeah. So if there's a Mac Source Sports Con, dude, I'm there. All right. I'm committing right now.
It's funny because last year I went around looking for Macs. Like, is anyone bringing a Mac to this thing? And I found one. And it was just like a MacBook Air sitting there all by itself. And I can, my guess would be that it's one of those deals where somebody was like, you know, my partner, here's his gaming PC, and I'm going to sit here and watch videos while he plays.
Yeah, I'm doing my homework. Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
This year I walked around, I found four.
Heck yeah. So
we're getting there or whatever.
But the Quake port that you have, like, that's, you can fully play. Like, if I brought my Mac running your port or the MacSourceSports.com build of Quake, I can play with everybody else just as well.
Yeah. The people who are playing like the original or whatever, I don't think it can connect to like remastered servers.
Okay.
And Quake 3 has got this kind of split of sorts where, about 10 years ago or 15 years ago, they had Quake Live, which was originally, it was a browser based game. It basically was Quake 3 that ran in a browser, and it was ad supported, and it went through a bunch of different evolutions over the years. Eventually just turning into a standalone game. But, Quake 3, you can run on the Mac nowadays because people like me help build the source for it. So Quake Live is slightly different and is not open source. And unfortunately, it also does not run well under like Parallels or Crossover or Whiskey or anything like that for whatever reason. So
that's still not there.
That would be a hindrance. Yeah, I would like to come up with some sort of a resource for people. I'd like to at some point, you know, maybe crowdfund a like iMac or whatever, and then like take that to these conventions, because I'm still taking my main PC to these QuakeCons or whatever. And it's cool because it's got stickers going back to 2012, but it also means it's a computer from 2012. Not run.
Dude, if you showed up with a current like M1 iMac, you know, it's like a pink iMac, and you're like sitting there playing Quake on it, that would turn heads for sure. That's cool. That's exciting. That's really cool. And I want to plug, man. I think the first time I ever actually reached out to you was, I'm a big fan of, I'm a Star Trek fan in general. And there's a game I had as a kid, Star Trek Voyager Elite Force. Raven Software built it on top of Quake 3 engine with some modifications. And they later went on to use that same modified engine on the Jedi, whatever, the Jedi Academy games that they did.
Yeah.
Which we do have, I think, Dream. Well, we have source ports of those. It's not part of Dream. I've played through those as well. But, man, I reached out to you because I'm like, there's like an open, they like technically released like the open, like the source of the multiplayer client, but the campaign. So I'll just plug, you know, I'm throwing this out there again, like Star Trek Voyager Elite Force is an excellent game. And honestly, even as a Quake clone or, you know, a derivative, just the setting, like, I don't know, doing Quake death matches in, cause they frame it all as like you're in the holodeck. So it's like, it'll just be anything. It's like you're running, it's like chaotic. You've got Janeway and everybody going crazy. Shoot, like that. There's, I don't know, there's something about joining a multiplayer Star Trek Voyager Elite Force match, because immediately you're just indaunted with phaser, like it's just so crazy, and it feels so immersive for Star Trek. So I would love to see Star Trek Voyager Elite Force. Tom, we're just wrapping this up here. We're at the 90 minute mark. We didn't get a chance to talk about Grassy Knoll. So, I mean, I played Grassy Knoll, dude. I streamed it. I like interactive fiction. It's just kind of one of those things where it's like nerds are into random nerd crap, and we have this overlap that you wrote an interactive fiction based on... You call it I don't even want to say this on YouTube. I'm afraid I'm going to be like demonetized. It's a JFK assassination simulator, which sounds horrific. It's not, dude. It's like you're a person in Dallas at the time of the event that happened. And it's just observation. It's almost like a Mind Forever Voyaging where you're just supposed to go around and you can kind of get things. And it kind of sounds like you wrote it in high school and you base it off of the movie. So it's like, but honestly, man, like I don't know anything about that event, and I've never seen that movie. So it's like coming in kind of with fresh eyes. Like it was a very fun and enjoyable experience for me. So thanks for Grassy Knoll, man.
Welcome. I watched that video, and that a surreal experience, watching someone play a game that you wrote, and B, watching people play a game that you wrote in high school. Yeah. It was literally just a deal where like I found that, like, for some reason I still have the disc. I've got a whole article where I've got pictures and everything.
Yeah, I wrote it.
But for some reason I still had the disc, and I got the game off of it, and I thought, well, let's see if I can recreate this in InForm, which is the thing you write text, one of the text adventure modern languages or whatever. And I'm watching it going, man, there are so many things. Like, I had this vision in high school that I was going to put this on a floppy disk and sell it or whatever. And like, that would have been a disaster, because everybody, like, this game doesn't actually work all that well. But watching it, I took a bunch of notes. I'm like, okay, I might tweak this some more and put out like a, you know, final version later.
Do it, man. Kind of thing. Do it, dude. Put it on itch. and start taking donations, man. Like, yeah, dude, it's just kind of a great vehicle because it's like, hey, do you want to give me a dollar for this? And it's like, yeah, dude, I'd give you a dollar for Grassy Knoll. Heck yeah, man. Like, and yeah, Inform is an evergreen platform. You know, I downloaded, I don't even remember what the interpreter I downloaded and used, but it was really good on Mac. Like it had a weird name. Black Moon or something. I'll have to look it up.
Frotzer.
What is it? It wasn't Frotz. It was like, it was something cooler and newer. It was like, it was really good. Anyways, Interactive Fiction, Grassy Knoll, check it out. Tom, thank you so much for talking with me. And seriously, from the bottom of my heart, as a Mac gamer, as an Apple exclusive household, it means a lot to me that you're doing this work and you have the site up. So I'd just like to say, keep it up. And yeah, I'm very thankful. And it sounds like I'm very excited for these kind of future developments as we continue to kind of march forward. I'm excited to see what happens.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Interrobang.